In a conversation with a friend who's an atheist? Stop by the Utah Christian Research Center to see our selection of books that may be of help. The Utah Christian Research Center is open Wednesday through Saturday at 10 a.m. at 579 West Galena Park Place in Draper. Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry, and with me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. Last week, we began looking at the fourth volume of Saints. Saints is a four-volume set. It's supposed to be a history of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Each one of the volumes covers a certain period of history within the LDS Church. Volume 4 covers the area between 1955 and the year 2020. It's called Saints Sounded in Every Ear. Before we begin where we left off on Friday, I just want to again express my frustration with this series, Eric, because we are used to researching books that I think have some real historical value. I would say the Documentary History of the Church, which is a 7-volume set, the Comprehensive History of the Church, which is a 6-volume set. I think the Encyclopedia of Mormonism is a good source to go to for information, but I'm not real impressed with this series. It has too many stories in it that really, in my opinion, have no historical value at all.
I think you would say distracting from what they're trying to accomplish. And so they incorporate these stories within each other. And so all of a sudden you move into the story that was from 2 chapters ago, and then you go back. And it's very confusing, I think, for me as a reader who understands Mormon history and reading about things that really don't have any bearing on the history of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Well, you mentioned one of my frustrations. It's like when you're watching a movie, all of a sudden there will be like a flashback to another time period. But at the same time, all those flashbacks have something to do with the conclusion of the story at the end of the film. This doesn't do that. It has these sections interspersed throughout the various chapters, and it has nothing to do with the paragraph probably that precedes it. It has nothing to do with it at all. And they did that in the section that we are looking at regarding the story of the first vision. Did it really happen the way Joseph Smith claimed?
At the beginning of the book, they actually have a list of contributors. It's about a couple dozen people. And we did some looking up on the general editors, the writers, and the editors. And fewer than half have any serious education in history. Many of them are English type people and editing. And so, and fiction writing, several are fiction writers. Well, I mean, this is very much like a fictional book, even though they supposedly are telling true stories. It's kind of frustrating that we know about those two series you talk about, the history of the church and the comprehensive history of the church. Obviously, they stop and they don't give us history from the period we're looking at right now, 1955 to 2020. But still, it seems like they could have done a little better.
I think so. And the reason why we're covering this subject again, folks, is because it is in this book, and this book was released in 2024. If the first vision is that important, we think that's something that we as Christians should probably focus on. We should probably have a little bit of a background of what the first vision is about, and maybe have some facts that the average Latter-day Saint might not know that could interest them in why we have problems with the first vision account. We don't want to just take Joseph Smith's word for it, the founder of the Mormon movement. We want to see if history bears it out. And this is what took us to page 159 last week, because it starts off by saying, "Meanwhile, in the United States, Truman Matson, a philosophy professor at Brigham Young University, received a memo from his colleague Richard Bushman, a professor in the history department. Richard was concerned about an academic article he had just read. Its author, Wesley Walters, was a Presbyterian minister in Midwestern United States. He claimed to have disproved Joseph Smith's first vision. How did he disprove it, quote unquote? Because I'm sure most Latter-day Saints would say, oh, I don't think he really disproved it. I would tend to disagree, especially with what Wes Walters came up with. And what did Wes Walters find? He found that despite what Joseph Smith claims in his testimony, that there was a revival in the spring of 1820 that resulted in multitudes being added to the churches. And he mentions the Baptist, Methodist, and Presbyterian churches in Palmyra. He found that there was no religious excitement in Palmyra during the spring of 1820, as Joseph Smith claims. A lot of the details that Joseph Smith gives in his testimony in The Pearl of Great Price can be found correlating with the revival that took place in that area in 1824, the fall of 1824, and into 1825. Yet the church continually tells this story that it was the spring of 1820 when this revival took place, and that was the reason why Joseph Smith went out to the woods to pray, wanting to know which of all the churches were true. Why? Because he claims there was a disagreement towards the end of this revival as to where the new converts were going to attend. We had Sandra Tanner in last week, and she made a good point. If there's not a lot of converts being made in this particular revival, why would you be fighting over the converts? Well, we know that in the 1824-1825 revival that seems to fit the description Joseph Smith gives us, there were a number of converts. So I could see why they might have been concerned, and maybe some of these pastors were a little protective. There was Benjamin Stockton, we know by name. There was George Lane, we know him by name. He was the Methodist minister. And we also know that those two men that were involved in this revival weren't even in the Palmyra area, except perhaps George Lane did speak at some camp meetings in the area. But he's coming in and he's going out. He's not sticking around. And you would think if this great revival was going on, why does George Lane come for just a short time and then he disappears only to come back later on? This can all be traced. And we're going to be looking at this because obviously the church sees Wes Walters as a serious threat, because it says on page 169, Truman was sure Wesley's findings were wrong, but because little historical research had been done on the first vision and the earliest days of the church, he had no way to prove it. That paragraph ends by saying, an attack on the first vision seemed like an attack on the very foundation of the Restoration. We would tend to agree with that, mainly because 15th President Gordon B. Hinckley said so. He said that if Joseph Smith did not have an encounter with the Father and the Son, the church is not true. He also said that they, as Latter-day Saints, would be engaged in blasphemy.
The vast majority of Latter-day Saints are not members in the 1820s, of course, because the church doesn't start until 1830, and the official version doesn't come until 1838. Joseph Smith can say whatever he wants about a revival in 1838, but few people are going to go do the research to see if this is actually true. It's not until later when Wesley Walters finds this out. They're going to accept Joseph Smith at his word.
When we had Sandra on last week, she made a very good point. Of course, when Sandra speaks, she's often making very good points. One of the concerns that she had and her husband Gerald is the fact that nobody talks about this revival in the early years of the church. We find even critical works that were produced in the early 1830s, for instance, they don't start with this first vision that Joseph Smith talks about later on, or that most Latter-day Saints will introduce if you were to talk to them now. They start with Moroni's visit in 1823. Nothing is said about God the Father and Jesus showing up. I think that's very significant. I think what Sandra was bringing out is very important. I wish more Latter-day Saints would see the significance of this. This huge event of the Father showing up is completely overlooked, or should I say, it's a long period of silence. We don't hear anything about this till Joseph Smith writes down this testimony in 1838. It's eventually published in the Times and Seasons a few years later, and then it starts to become a part of the narrative, but not in the beginning. And these scholars are going to want to get together and try to prove Wesley Walters is wrong. They try to raise money. Truman Matson and Richard Bushman go to the church leadership, David O. McKay, to get $7,000. They need to beat Wesley Walters to the punch, yet the church is reluctant to give them the money. I'm thinking your very existence is on the line, and you're reluctant to give these scholars money to go do the necessary research to prove this damning evidence. And I think that's a great way to describe it. It's damning evidence. If Walters is correct, yes, this is an attack on the restoration as members of the LDS Church understand it. But eventually they get the money. If you've ever read Wes Walters' booklet. It was originally titled New Light on Mormon Origins. We have the permission to print this book after Wes passed away. Helen Walters, his widow, gave me personally the permission to reprint New Light on Mormon Origins, and we've done that. We retitled it because that was way back in the 1960s. It's not really New Light anymore after all these years, so we changed the title. It's called The Palmyra Revival and Mormon Origins, but it contains everything that Wes Walters had in his original booklet. His findings were published in the Journal of the Evangelical Theological Society. It was known as JETS. And of course, that's the article that Bushman finds and causes all this concern. So we're trying to bring you up to speed here, and they eventually get the money to send a research team back to Palmyra. And this is where the story picks up again in Volume 4 of Saints. There's a lot of other minutia in between, but then all of a sudden it comes back to the story.
So, Bill, what we read last week was the first of two parts on the first vision, and we're going to get more starting with pages 179 to 182. And what they're going to emphasize is a BYU Studies volume dedicated to this whole issue. These scholars do go to the East Coast and they do their research in the summer of 1968. And so in the spring of 1969, the BYU Studies Volume 9, Number 3. We're going to take some time with that this week. We want to look and see what they had to be able to show Wesley Walters being wrong.
And we want to mention that if you want to see this volume, we have a link to it on our website. We have at mrm.org, if you go to our homepage, there's a drop-down menu that says Resources. At the bottom of that, you will see LDS Sources, and you will see links to a number of LDS publications. We have included a direct link to the BYU Studies. Now, you're going to have to scroll down to this 1969 edition. It has a picture of Joseph Smith on the front cover. But if you want to read the article yourself, by all means, we hope you do read the article, because I think if you read it carefully, you're probably not going to be very impressed with some of the arguments that these scholars raise. But yet, they try to paint a very positive picture in this fourth volume of Saints. It's what I've often referred to as whistling past the graveyard.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism from a biblical perspective.